Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5. The game brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking Titans. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Steve Lehman from News Channel 5. Steve, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Robbie, good morning. Joe, how are you?
We're good. Doing great. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. So, Steve, let's start on the Julio Jones front. Obviously, on the injury report yesterday with a hamstring injury, if you think back to last year, it was also a hamstring injury that caused him to miss seven games. If you're a Titans fan, how concerned are you with A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, already on the injury report, dealing with a soft tissue injury this early into the season?
Well, I'm a little less concerned based off of the other guys stepping up in the fashion that they did over the weekend. It's not like a total disaster, perhaps, but it is definitely alarming because especially those hamstring issues with wide receivers, they always seem to linger. They're the type of injury where even when he comes back, I feel like you're always going to kind of have your fingers crossed hoping that he doesn't tweak it again and then it bothers him in November or December. It feels like it's something that both of these great wide receivers are going to have to manage throughout the course of the year. You obviously don't want to feel like that if you're a Titans fan. I also think just the fact that he showed up on the injury list yesterday adds another layer to this whole thing that I don't understand why it hasn't been more straightforward from the Titans. I mean, I guess I assume now that the reason he didn't play in the fourth quarter is because he tweaked that hamstring and they were concerned that they could make it worse and that they may lose him for an extended period of time. But why didn't they just say that? That's not what we got after the game. It's not really what we got from Mike Vrabel on Monday. And so now, because of all that, I think they just increased the scrutiny on their biggest, acquisition of the offseason for probably the length of this season. I think everything that happens with him, whether it be physically or body language, or how he deals with the media, or how he interacts with Mike Vrabel, I think we're just going to put it under the microscope for the rest of the way now because of the fact that they kind of kept this under the rug, and then all of a sudden there's this injury that adds to it, and you're trying to sort the whole thing out.
Well, I mean, I agree with your second part there, Steve. I mean, I think that was already the case, but I think there's a very easy answer to your question, and that's that if Vrabel had the choice, we would never have a single shred of information about anybody's injury. I mean, I think that's the easy answer here. Vrabel didn't want to say,
right.
I mean, in both cases, in both pressers, he basically said, guys, I don't talk about injuries. Hint, hint, it's an injury, but I don't talk about injuries. I mean, that's basically what he did, which is unfortunate because there's a great opportunity to just be straightforward and say, look, I normally don't do this, but here's what happened. But you're right.
Well, it's bizarre, Joe, because he's such a player's coach in his mindset, but this does not help the player.
Agree.
It gives you 3 or 4 days where people are like, what just happened? Did Julio Jones, pull himself out of the game? All those sort of things. And I obviously don't think that's what happened now, but when you have that type of speculation, it just leads you to look for things like that further down the road, and I just don't understand why he did it. And by the way, it'd be one thing if he wanted to be all secretive, if it was a league that didn't require you to disclose injuries, or heck, even if it was like the NHL, and you could come out and say it's an upper body or a lower body type of, where you don't have to be specific, but every Wednesday you have to disclose what happened in great detail on the injury report, and then eventually you have to give a designation to him by Friday. So it was going to come out. So the idea that you're being secretive for 24 or 48 hours just doesn't help anybody.
No, totally agree. This is a great example of where you and again, with all the stuff, the history of Julio, all this, everything that goes with it, where you do different than what you are programmed to do. But I think with Julio, you can look back at camp when, of course, you don't have to disclose anything. And that day where he leaves practice, going back to last year, it's probably always been the hamstring. And frankly, I mean, I think that's the biggest concern for it. Because like you said, Steve, it's just those things. I mean, we saw Corey Davis in his rookie year. he just could never get really back, and then he'd come back and it would act up again.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And that's your concern if you're a Titans fan. If for some reason they both can't go this weekend, and I guess as I sit here right now, I feel like at least one of them is going to find a way to get on the field Sunday in New York. But if they both can't go for one game, it's not ideal, obviously, but maybe you get Marcus Johnson back, which, by the way, I think that would be huge for this team whenever that happens. But you also feel okay with some of these other guys and what they were able to step up and do last weekend against a team like Indianapolis as you go on the road to face a team like the Jets. But the concern, as you just said, is how long these things often linger. And are we going to be talking about the hamstrings of Julio Jones and A.J. Brown in November or December?
Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Steve, what have you made of this Titans defense through the first three games? Have you been encouraged by what you see? What do you think they are right now defensively?
Well, Robbie, I think you have to be encouraged if for no other reason that they were so awful last year. They're clearly not that. They're better than they were. They've made some significant improvements. In fact, over the last 2 weeks, opponents are converting on third down just 29% of the time. And when you consider back to last year when it was above 50% and they were legitimately the worst modern-day third down defense ever, that's a huge improvement because that's part of the deal, is just being able to get off the field. I know they talked a lot about turnovers yesterday, and it'd be great if they could get that because that was frankly the only thing the defense did well last year, is create some havoc and get a turnover here and there to get off the field. Well, if you can get off the field on third down, you get the ball back to your offense just the same as well. So if they can keep that going, that's important. I'm even encouraged by the fact that I feel like last week they made some significant improvement from the Seattle week where there were X plays galore, and that was really the Seattle offense, were the big explosive touchdown plays. Last week they made Indianapolis drive the field. And when you make a team go 70 or 80 yards, and do it at two or three plays at a time to move the sticks, eventually you give your defense a chance to make a stop. And we saw it last week, even in some of Indianapolis' best drives, eventually the Titans got a stop in the red zone and forced them to kick field goals. And in the NFL, the recipe is get off the field on third down, force people to kick field goals in the red zone, and get turnovers. And right now, at least for the last week and a half, the Titans have done pretty well in two of the three of those areas. And if they can keep that up, that's a recipe for success. Because we always said, Robbie, that the goal for this defense, it's not to be a top five or even a top 10 defense. It was just improvement.
Yep.
If you can go from 28th in the NFL last year and get into the top 20 or so with this offense, or at least what we think this offense can be when it finally gets going to full speed, now all of a sudden you're talking about a true contender. And so far, the defense has done its part.
This game, Steve, does give me a little bit of a flashback to, well, a couple games, but in particular last year's game at Cincinnati. Bad team, terrible offensive line that's just riddled with injuries. And, you know, it's like you just got to go handle business and take care of it. And the Titans really just got thumped that day by a very talented rookie who had had his ups and downs but clearly can play. I don't know if Zach Wilson can play. We haven't really seen much evidence of that, but he's talented. Do you see any parallels there? Do you have any sort of concern level that, you know, in part, I guess, the psychology of now everything's fine, you've won a couple in a row against good teams, you should handle this, could bite the Titans again?
Yeah, I do. Exactly. I have felt at times that the Titans don't always handle the success the greatest, that when they should be stacking three or four or five wins in a row, they slip up somewhere along the way. And this is the perfect opportunity. They should win the next two games. Regardless of their injuries, regardless of what's going on, they should go to New York and they should go to Jacksonville and win. But obviously it's the NFL and all these teams are good. They all have professionals and anything can happen, and you got to be prepared to go and do it. And I do think there's a parallel to Cincinnati last year. And here's where I think the defense really plays an important role this weekend, because obviously the offense isn't going to be at full strength. So I don't know if you can just count on the offense to go in there, because that is a pretty good front seven that the Jets have. Can you just hand the ball off to Derrick Henry 35 times and hope that he gets you 175 yards and that's enough against them? What can you get out of your passing game? I don't know if we know exactly what we'll see from the offense. So I think you have to hope, if you're the Titans, that this defense that is pretty healthy goes up there and has another really strong performance. They bother Zach Wilson. They are able to get pressure against that terrible offensive line that the Jets have, and that they kind of take over the game. And if they can do that, or they limit the Jets' offense, I think the Titans are going to be fine. But if it becomes what it became last year in Cincinnati, where the Bengals were able to score and score consistently, well, now all of a sudden you're asking an offense that isn't 100% to play at a very high level and almost play perfect. And that's what happened in that game last year. They got down so big that they forced the offense to essentially play perfect in the second half, and they weren't able to do it. And that's the thing that they have to avoid.
Steve, last thing for you. How do you think Derrick Henry's body is going to hold up at the end of the season when he has approximately 794 touches?
It's a fair question if he was a normal human, right? I mean, if he was you or me or Joe, I'd obviously be very, very concerned, because I think he'd break down, you know, in the next 15 minutes given all the wear and tear that he's had. But I'm not sure Derrick Henry is human. He is just such a physical freak. And at every level of his career, high school, college, now the NFL, his workload is just different than any other human. And he continues to not just have success, but I feel like he gets better and better the higher the workload is. And I look back at the first 3 weeks of the season, yes, he's carried the ball a lot. Yes, he's had a bunch of touches. He's even increased his workload in the passing game, which I think is one of the revelations of the season and a huge help to this offense, especially given the injury situation. But I don't look back and think, gosh, man, he really took a licking on that play. I feel like, if anything, he's basically doled out the punishment when it's been necessary. And so for that reason, I feel like if there's one guy on the planet who's built to carry the ball 756 times or whatever you just suggested, I mean, he's on pace for, I think, 454 right now or something like that.
Yep.
But if there's one guy who's ready to do that, I think it's Derrick Henry. So until they prove or he proves me otherwise, I feel okay with them continuing to ride him.
Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Steve, great stuff as always, my friend. We appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Absolutely. Love waking up with you guys. Have a great day.
That's right. Thanks, appreciate buddy. You, brother. Steve Lehman from News Channel 5, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll come back. We'll react to what Steve had to say there. Take your thoughts as well on the Titans on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune into the NFL Game of the Week on ESPN 94.9, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. The NFL Game of the Week is the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Green Bay Packers on Sunday. Kickoff set for 3:25. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Visit volstatebank.com to learn more about their free Kasasa checking account. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube today and every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Thanks to Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 for joining us in the last segment. And this is an intriguing game for the Titans coming up. Steve says he wouldn't be surprised to see one of Julio Jones or A.J. Brown on the field on Sunday. And look, I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility. I would be surprised if we see either one of those two, just given the fact that it is a hamstring injury. You don't want to mess around with those things.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised. I'd be very surprised if we see either of them. I'd be very surprised if we see either of them on the practice field today or tomorrow or in the game Sunday. And some of that, no one would ever, ever cop to this in the building, but I think some of that may be, even if one of them says, like, hey, it's feeling good, you should be able to win this game without them. Yeah, no one's going to say that.
Sure.
But you got to – and, of course, Vrabel, I think Vrabel was asked yesterday about, like, this two-game thing. You know, Jets, Jaguars, these two games, and then it gets tough. And, of course, he's like, Jets, yeah. Come on. No coach is going to indulge any of that stuff. But they also look at things like that and say, gosh, if we could be fully healthy for Monday Night Football against the Buffalo Bills in a couple weeks and be 4-1, that'd be pretty sweet. So are there a few guys who maybe, you know, they could go, they're close, but you don't do it? Like, is Bud Dupree, is he going to be one of those guys?
Yeah.
Is he going to be up there Sunday? I mean, it's kind of strange that, you know, that he was active if they really weren't planning to play him on Sunday, which was a good question by Paul Kaharsky. And Kaharsky had a piece at his website, paulkaharsky.com, about how, you know, he does get a bonus. Now, again, this is not uncommon, but he gets like a $15,000 bonus for being active.
Yep.
Each game that he's active is part of his deal. So was that like a doing a solid for Bud Dupree? You know, you could get in trouble in situations like that if all of a sudden you just have a rash of injuries at one position. But there's a guy who maybe he'd be going if it was Buffalo, but maybe he doesn't. Now, obviously, this was a huge game against the Colts, and he didn't go. So it's not like they're just, quote-unquote, load management here. But I think there's probably going to be a couple guys beyond those two receivers who maybe it's like either or, it's close, questionable. You know what? We should be able to do this without you.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Dennis texting in. This game reminds you of last year's Bengals game? Well, the Titans will be wearing navy jerseys with white britches. Yes. The first time wearing that combo since last year's Bengals game.
We talked about this earlier.
It is.
We talked about it off the air.
We talked about it off the air.
Okay.
It is my favorite uni combo that the Titans have.
Really?
It is. I love it.
The navy tops and the white pants.
Okay. I love it.
It's not a bad combo.
It's underused, but to Dennis's point, the last time I remember seeing it was definitely the Bengals game.
Mine by far is what they just wore.
So that's my least favorite.
The light blue jersey and the navy pants.
I say that. My least favorite is actually the navy blue jerseys and the light blue pants. They've done that like a couple of times over the years.
Really? I don't even remember that.
It's not great.
So do you like the Smurf look? The jammies?
Not really.
Okay. The Thursday night look?
No.
Like when they played the Jags a few years ago, they had,
you remember that,
they had their jammies?
Yeah, their jammies and the whatever in the world Jacksonville was wearing, like the Dijon mustard jerseys that they had, was awful.
As an unnamed columnist for the Tennessean at the time wrote, it looked like the contents of a baby's diaper.
Yes, it did.
Versus the jammies, Smurf jammies of the Titans.
Thank God they don't do that on Thursday Night Football anymore.
Yeah, but that is that's a good point. The Titans are wearing those uniforms for the first time since that debacle in Cincinnati. The other game, that which I forgot to mention, Steve, I said it reminds me of two games, and I said, here's one. The other game is the Buffalo game of 3 years ago when the Titans were riding high. They'd won three in a row, and Buffalo was bad. What's interesting about that is, of course, Buffalo had the young quarterback. They had the coach, McDermott. They had some things kind of going. They had some defensive progress. They were a bad team. But then you saw what they became. Maybe the Bengals are going to move forward and become a good team in the AFC. Maybe the Jets in 2023-24, all of a sudden it's like, ooh, Zach Wilson and Elijah Moore and Corey Davis and that salty defense.
Yeah.
But right now they're bad, and you got to go beat them handily.
Heidi from Dixon texting in, I agree with Jared for once. If the Titans play sloppy, win or lose, for a fourth week in a row, either Mike or these coordinators don't have a grip on the players, and we won't make a long run in the playoffs. This is coming from Heidi and Dixon.
Yeah, it's always interesting. Like, so the play that Chester Rogers made, you know, where he lets it pop up and they get a pick. Or even, again, like the decision Tannehill made on his first pick. I mean, look, ultimately everything is the coaches are responsible. But I'm always like, so what, you know, do they not – if they don't work on stuff like that, then I agree. Well, that's a mistake. I mean, Vrabel was talking yesterday about, yeah, we're going to do extra drills on this and that in terms of turnovers, doing it and then forcing it. You know, avoiding them on offense, forcing them on defense. Is it really – in professional sports, is it not come down at some point to a professional who's getting paid a lot of money?
Well, he also said at one point during the press conference, look, guys, there are some things you can coach and there are some things that you can't. And I believe his quote was, God love Bill Belichick, but he never taught me how to strip sack a quarterback.
Right.
Like –
And again, now those things, when you say those as a coach, you want to say those things when you're winning.
Yes.
Because if you're losing and you say stuff like that, like, well, they get out of here.
Yep.
We'll find someone who can. But he's not wrong. He's absolutely not wrong. By the way, we had what on YouTube? Someone on a variable rant?
Oh, yeah. David on YouTube. Our defense hasn't been good since Dean Pease left. A lot of past Titans players seem to have a problem with Vrabel. Dean Pease seems to have a problem with Vrabel. This past Sunday, Julio and Vrabel, something happened between them, but I don't know what. Vrabel, with a more talented defense, hasn't been able to produce. Vrabel seems like a problem. I know no one cares because we're winning more than losing at the moment, but this guy needs to go before he turns into Bill O'Brien. Mark my words.
I know we're winning, but this guy's a problem. I know the coach is winning, but I mark my words, he's a problem. Okay, the one thing in there, it's a great example of how it doesn't matter what the facts are. So if you think that the whole thing with Julio, if you still think it had something to do with something that happened between them, then you also think the Titans are faking his injury right now.
Yeah.
So like the Titans are like, ah, you know what? We don't want to talk anymore about how there's a big feud going on. So, Julio, you sit out a few days. We'll put hamstring on the injury report. How about that? I mean, can we please join the real world here for a minute?
We'll continue the conversations on the Titans and the Jets when we come back. We got a lot of your thoughts to get to on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Are you struggling to find and retain good employees? Well, we can help. Cromwell Media invites you to attend one of our two free recruitment and retention seminars hosted by Chris Stonick on October 5th or 6th. For the past 33 years, Stonick has helped hundreds of companies find newer, more cost-efficient ways to recruit qualified employees, learn new recruitment strategies, enjoy a continental breakfast, and be eligible to win door prizes. Go to thegamenashville.com/register for more info and to sign up. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Talking Titans, looking ahead to the game against the Jets. Not very much love coming from the Jets all week long here, obviously. They were awful last week. They've been awful all season so far. Tyler on the text line, texting in, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I feel very confident in our wide receiver threes and fours against the Jets. It's a good opportunity to rest AJ and Julio, all while seeing what others can do. At least we're playing the Jets. Also, we should bring up Mason Kinsey. Smiley face.
If only Mason Kinsey was out there. Again, I'm Mason Kinsey. Great story. Great that he's getting paid by an NFL team. At no point ever has he been ahead of Cam Batson. So if Cam Batson goes down, you know, if they keep having to reach deep, they've got Mason Kinsey, they got Dez Fitzpatrick available.
They do.
They're on the practice squad.
Matt from Memphis texting in. I think the Jets are being way overlooked this week. The Titans need to buckle down these next 2 weeks. Look, I will say,
it's the NFL.
It is.
The Jets absolutely can win this game. It's the NFL.
I know.
Like, again, if you don't think there's any chance, then you can't possibly pay attention to this league. They've got guys up front.
They do.
Defensively. You know, they've got Zach Wilson.
He's been awful so far.
Has been terrible.
I mean, it
doesn't mean he's destined to stay that way.
Look, we've seen Zach Wilson throw the ball. The guy can make the throws. Now, there's a lot more that goes into it than that, and we understand that at the NFL level. But, you know, sometimes the light bulb goes on, and you can have a good game, and that could be a springboard that you need for the rest of your career. I will say, like, you brought up the Bengals game. It's different in that aspect. Like, Joe Burrow, really from the time he set foot in the NFL, has been pretty good.
True.
And Zach Wilson, it's been a struggle so far.
Yeah, that is definitely true. The parallel is, like, the offensive line, this one is bad,
yes.
That one was bad, didn't matter. Now I think that this defense is better.
There's also no Jonathan Joseph trotting around out there either. And that game in particular, oh boy.
Yeah, that was like the day. Well, maybe there were other days, but that was definitely one day where you're like, he can't play in the league anymore.
Was that his last game?
I think it may have been.
I think that may have been his last game.
I think so, yeah. So, yeah, look, they're in better shape there. I mean, honestly, they're in better shape in terms of pass rush, even without Bud Dupree. guy we had on the show yesterday has been a nice find. We'll see if that can continue, but he's been a nice find. Autry has absolutely made a difference. You know, and Harold Landry, and I'm going to, this reminds me of something that I saw on Twitter. Speaking of Kaharski, he retweeted a Next Gen Stats. Listen to this from Next Gen Stats. Harold Landry generated a career-high 12 pressures, half sack on 32 pass rush snaps against Indy. His 37.5% pressure rate tied for the third highest in a game in the Next Gen Stats era. Minimum 30 pass rushes. He's the first player in the NFL this season with at least 10 pressures in a game this season. Now holds the most record of the record for most pressures in a single game for the Titans. Yeah.
Hey.
Some people will scoff at Next Gen Stats. See, stats like that, like I put a lot more, and Next Gen is pretty respected. Like, I put more stock in something like that than the stupid Pro Football Focus. He got a 73.1.
Yes.
You don't even know what his assignment was half the time. But that's, look, I mean, he got five quarterback hits as well in the traditional stat column. So Harold Landry, very, very unsung guy on this team. Also, though, every snap he plays, every week he's ready, practices like, you know, what, talk about a guy you can't afford to lose to injury.
By the way, the Cincinnati game last year, the last game for Jonathan Joseph as a member of the Tennessee Titans. Had 10 tackles in that game. I mean, they were catching the ball a lot in front of him.
Well, at least he then completed the play. He finished the play, though, right?
He did.
I did. It really does remind me some of that game. And the difference being, again, like the Bengals were also not good on D. The Titans moved the ball at will. I mean, that Tannehill pick was
brutal.
Devastating in that game.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, a motivated Corey Davis, if the Titans come out like they did against Arizona, they will lose this game. Well, yes, I would say if they come out like they did against Arizona and just have open season on their quarterback, they're probably going to be in trouble.
Would you like to crush our quarterback? Here you go.
But I hear what the texter's saying. There's got to be a certain level of intensity that you bring to the table. There's also got to be a certain level of execution. And look, I mean, the injury report, there are still some concerning names on this list. I mean, we've talked a lot about A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, and that highlights the list. Taylor Lewan with a toe injury, not practicing yesterday. You've got Brett Kern, your punter, with a groin injury. We saw how that
right
went last
groin.
Year. Yeah, right groin. Excuse me, very specific, right groin.
The right groin has been more problematic than the left groin, I think, for Kern.
Apparently so. Bud Dupree didn't practice yesterday. And by the way, we've not really talked about this in a couple weeks. Still no practice for Caleb Farley with a shoulder injury.
Yeah. Yeah, so, he's just totally out of sight, out of mind with him. But
yeah,
that's not great. Well, the toe thing with Lewan, if that's like turf toe is terrible.
Yeah.
So maybe Tyson Brock. There's a guy to watch today. Key guys to watch today. Lewan, is he out there? Can he do anything? Certainly Bud Dupree. Bud Dupree has not done any Wednesday stuff yet. But now after missing a game, he usually has been limited on Thursday. Is that the case today? The two good things that I think, especially for this week, and if we're right that Brown and Jones are not going to be out there, Marcus Johnson, I thought, looked fine yesterday.
Yep.
I thought he looked just like Marcus Johnson running around, which is a big deal. If he can be active, he immediately becomes wide receiver one, in my mind, based on how he played. He was easily the most impressive receiver in camp, other than those two guys in the rare times they played. And then Firkser. Don't underrate. Look, Anthony Firkser is not going to be George Kittle or anything like that. But Anthony Firkser is an option one on some plays for Ryan Tannehill, unlike any other tight end on the roster. There's a big gap between how they will use him and what he can do in the passing game and those other guys. And Pruitt is, you know, taking advantage of some moments to make big plays. Anthony Firkser would absolutely be a big boost to the offense if he's able to go Sunday.
Chris texting in on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. It's never good when your right tackle is among the leaders on your team in forced fumbles. It is not. You've got to find a way to correct that this week.
That is an awesome stat. Hey, speaking of right tackles, here's a question on my text line from Dana Nolansville. Has a player ever played for their dad in the NFL? Because, you know, Tyler Vrabel.
Well,
some people think Tyler Vrabel is a prominent pick
in
the next draft. And the Titans might need to draft another tackle.
Well, they've had great luck with that. It's really gone well.
I mean, you got the scout on this guy, right?
Yeah, I would hope so.
I mean, you can't screw this one up. Has that ever happened?
I would doubt it, but I'd have to go back and think about that. In the NFL, I mean, it happens all the time in college football, but in the NFL,
did Kippy Hallis play for George Hallis in 1931? I don't know. That's a great trivia question.
Tyler Vrabel.
The interesting thing about that is you'd probably be hesitant. I mean, obviously the Titans would probably be hesitant to ever draft another offensive lineman again, but you'd probably be hesitant for people to be like, oh, nepotism. But I mean, you can't have.
What if he's the best player on your board? Right. Whenever that would be, and you're like, can't do it.
Right, like you have to do it, right?
Yeah.
You got to throw that out the window. You cannot possibly have a better feel for a player, better inside info. Change his diapers.
Yeah. Something to look forward to. Maybe that's the long-term solution at right tackle for the Titans.
Although,
as you've pointed out, David Questenberry's looked awfully good so far.
He really has.
I don't know that he's the long-term right tackle answer, but he's looked pretty good.
Well, Keith Carter was talking the other day about Questenberry, and you've heard this from other people too. Like, he is, his process for improvement is something that other people on the team look at. Like, and remember, battling cancer is a huge deal, obviously.
Yeah.
But it is also, it also means that really, like, he's younger in terms of wear and tear in this league than his actual age. So maybe coming into his own here, and maybe a great deal for the Titans. And if they win, then that's what you focus on. If they lose, then, and he plays well, then again, you look at the second round pick and say, wow, how many other guys could have helped this team in 21 as opposed to Dylan Radins?
When we come back, it's time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your submissions on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. That's coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game.
The best and worst of the sports week, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
On ESPN.
1025 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And it's that time of the week, time for the best and worst thing in sports for this week. We'll take your submissions on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, would you like to kick us off this week, as you do every week, with the best thing in sports? What is your best thing in sports for this week?
This one was tough, and it's a bit repetitive, but I think it's the right time to go with this, especially with what we have ahead. The best thing in sports for me right now is football, and in particular college football, actually being interesting.
Yep.
There's a lot of programs that are surprising. There are some programs that are surprising in a bad way, which is a good thing for the rest of the world. Sorry, Ohio State and Clemson fans, but it just is. And I was really fascinated by the way the rest of the season goes this weekend in particular. I would also say, as a secondary item there, the NFL has been fantastic too. And yet, college football is sort of stepping forward right now, and I think it's kind of needed that. It's needed this competitiveness. It's needed the regular season to feel important, and it does right now.
It does feel important, and we're going to get back into this coming up at 9 o'clock with Blake Topmeyer and look at the SEC slate, because let me tell you, it's a good SEC slate coming up this weekend. This is a big weekend for college football. You know, every now and then you look around the college football slate and you say, not much out there this weekend. That is not the case with this one. It's going to be awesome.
Yes.
Really looking forward to that. Michelle Knezovic, your best thing in sports for this week.
Really quick, guys, we just had a caller tell us that a head coach in the NFL has had his son on the team, George Wilson of the Dolphins. with George Wilson Jr.
There you go.
Really?
Yeah. So he was a QB. He just caller just called in to let us know.
When the heck did George Wilson coach the Dolphins?
I'm looking at you, buddy.
Wow.
That's okay. In your wheelhouse.
So thanks to him.
Back with my
hopefully it's right
years.
Information that he just
oh, I'm sure it's right. Yeah.
But
I'm Googling this right now.
Google it, Joe. Let us know. We're doing best first.
Correct.
I feel like this story, it got some light on Twitter, but it kind of got hidden through all this Julio Jones. Is he injured? Is he not injured or anything? But on Monday, Derrick Henry went to the Boys and Girls Club and he gave them, it's like over 1,000 backpacks with school supplies and everything like that. Just giving back to the community. I mean, you hear so much about how he's just this freak on the field, but he also just does so many great things for the community. Even a couple weeks ago, he was like offering to buy people's artwork of him. So I just thought that was pretty awesome. He said that he grew up going to the Boys and Girls Club, and that's how he became in love with football. So I thought it was awesome that he did that in Middle Tennessee for all those kids.
Good guy, Derrick Henry.
And then sort of taking over, that was Delanie Walker.
Yep.
So he's sort of taken the baton from him, which is awesome. That's a great program.
My best thing in sports for this week, the pettiness of Tom Brady. Maybe not directly the pettiness of Tom Brady, but look, you can tell this game is going to mean a lot to Brady. This is not just any other game, him walking back in there to Foxborough coming up on Sunday. This is going to be personal. This is going to be awesome. And when Alex Guerrero and all these people close to Brady are coming out making comments about Belichick and the way the relationship ended, and the big talking point yesterday was Tom Brady tried to meet with Belichick in person and say goodbye, and Belichick didn't have time for him to meet in person, all this other stuff. There's a lot of pettiness out there, and I am here for it. This is going to be awesome. And again, the game might suck, but this is going to be awesome coming up on Sunday. That's my best thing in sports.
They have not disappointed with the soap opera sideshow here.
They have not.
I didn't think it was going to be this good. It's been pretty good.
Tom's like, I'm not reminiscing. This is game week. Yeah. This is not time for memories. I'm like, oh gosh, here we go.
Yeah, it's going to be good stuff. Looking forward to it. Joe Rexroad, your worst thing in sports for this week.
Well, I was going to go with Matt Nagy and the coaching job that he did and just like the entire, the whole this bleep show, Skia Tika show in Chicago. Yes. But I'm going to switch on that and first of all give a tip of the cap to a couple of teammates of mine who are unbelievably good, Meg Linehan and Katie Strang. We know Katie Strang has done so much work, especially in the hockey realm, but in the NWSL, there is now a big investigation because of this Athletic piece about Paul Riley, North Carolina Courage coach, and I'm like three quarters of the way through the story. It is absolutely disgusting, the sexual coercion and stuff that have gone on here. So there's a big, already like the players union, you know, calling for an internal investigation. It's a mess. So it's why journalism matters. Also, it's a big fail by the league in particular as well over years here. And it's something that has to get addressed, and it's just another terrible example of, you know, athletes, and I think in particular women, not being protected by people who should be protecting them.
Michelle Knezovic, your worst thing in sports for the week.
Well, what Joe said, I'm definitely going to read that article. That's the worst. But my worst I had, Sue Bird might have played her last basketball game the other night. I love her. She's one of my favorite players, and she's also freaking hilarious. If you need a good laugh, go listen to her and Megan Rapinoe's COVID show they did during COVID on Instagram Live. It's freaking hilarious. But yeah, we might have seen her play her last basketball game against Diana Taurasi the other night. So that's kind of sad. End of an era for the WNBA.
Yep,
that is
two legends.
Great player.
Absolutely. My worst thing in sports for the week, Mike McCarthy's clock management. Have you seen this with the Dallas Cowboys head coach? It was. I think it about drove Peyton Manning off the screen.
Night. And then he was like, "Yeah, now he's not going to talk to me anymore." Yeah.
Well, it's 2 weeks in a row. So in the Chargers game, you know, they end up lining up for the game-winning field goal, which is great, and they hit it. It was like a 56-yarder. But the last play they ran, they had a timeout left, and they had like 30 seconds left on the clock. And they're sitting there with a 56-yarder, and they let the clock roll down from like 27 seconds to 3 and just say, you know what, 56 is close enough. Now, it ends up working out. You make the kick. But that's like at least a play you could have run to try to get a little closer if you're the Cowboys. And Mike McCarthy is, yeah, okay, whatever. We'll just try the 56-yarder. It worked out. And then on Monday against Philadelphia, there's like a minute left on the clock in the half, and they've got two timeouts. They're getting the ball back on a punt, and Peyton Manning's sitting there on the broadcast like, call a timeout. What are you doing? Why are you letting this clock run off? And the official on the broadcast, he literally walks up to Mike McCarthy and looks at him like he's expecting him to call a timeout. And McCarthy looks back at the official, and he's like, yeah, no, I'm good. And the official just like looks around and walks away. It's like it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. The amount of NFL head coaches that struggle with managing a clock. Mike McCarthy, it's not bit him yet, but goodness gracious, it's been awful. And I thought Peyton was going to have like a aneurysm on the broadcast the other night.
I think you just miss Mike McCarthy. Is this actually just your bitterness that you wish you wish he was the Packers coach still?
Super Bowl champion, Mike McCarthy.
That's right. Yeah, it is amazing. And this is, you know, clock management is the one thing that like anyone can just look at. I mean, it's just simple math.
Yeah.
And you would think that I remember when Mike Vrabel was here in his first year, and there are all these questions like, you know, how are you getting ready for the season? So he's like he was watching games and like practicing clock management stuff, watching all. Which
probably a good idea.
I was like, gosh, that seems like a little overboard, but he doesn't have these problems.
He does not.
You know, you can certainly find fault in this fourth down or this kick here instead of kicking there, but he knows how to do the math.
He does.
That should be like across the board, right? An expectation for everybody.
You would think. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chris texting in. A little bit of low-hanging fruit on this one, but the best thing in sports right now, Eli and Peyton Manning, these hips don't lie. The worst thing in sports is we will not see them again until week 7. So the Manning broadcast on a little bit of a break on Monday night.
So hold on then. That means that they will, week 7 is, will they be there? Will they do the Titans game or no?
No.
Ah, that stinks. I was actually really looking forward to it, really like looking forward to taping that and going back and, you know, watching like conversations and insights on the Titans.
Yep.
That's too bad.
Jason and Clarksville texting in. The best thing, the Braves dominating the Phillies the past two nights. Braves looking good to close out the season. Maybe they can be a threat in the postseason.
That was a called shot of mine that they're going to win the World Series. Just throwing it out there.
There you go.
Is that right?
It was.
The World Series.
Okay. Also, Eli is having his own Giants show now.
Yeah.
Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
No.
Eli's becoming a media darling, man. He's everywhere.
Like a show like this?
No, I think it's social, like a social media digital platform type show for the Giants.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Jim texting in, the best, the Preds are back on the ice. That's worst, realization that 35 isn't with us anymore. It's been a popular talking point so far through Preds training camp.
That's a very good pro and con Preds submission there.
Life without Pecorine.
Yeah.
It's interesting stuff for the Preds. Jordan texting in, the worst thing in sports, players trying to punch the ball out rather than going for the tackle. Cough, cough, Darius Leonard and the Colts defense. Jordan, the resident Colts fan. Darius Leonard did try to punch the ball out of Derrick Henry's hand, and that did not work out well for Darius Leonard on that play.
Yeah, Darius Leonard, he had a few moments Sunday where he wasn't what I'm used to seeing from him.
Did you see this story? I'm glad Josh on the text line brought this up. Devin Williams, who is in the bullpen for the Milwaukee Brewers, who just clinched the division. They're about to go through their playoff run. He's a rookie. He's pitched really well. He's going to miss the playoffs after punching a wall. And we've got some people saying he punched the wall in the celebration with the team, and other people saying he punched the wall in anger at his house. But either way, he punches the wall, breaks his hand, and is not going to be able to play for the Brewers in the postseason.
My gosh.
Baseball players can do the stupidest stuff sometimes. Like, you know, was it David Price? I don't know if it was Price or somebody else. Was it Price? Somebody got hurt playing Fortnite in the MLB.
Well, Joel Zamaya, former Tigers great closer, guitar hero.
Yeah.
Guitar hero. No, that reminds me of Gus Frerotte. Anybody remembers that when he celebrated by smashing his head into the wall?
Yes.
I mean, that's like dangerous.
It was one of the Grammaticas that celebrated by jumping up and down. Yep. And
how did you get a concussion? Well, I slammed my head into
a wall.
Yeah. Well, he hurt his neck. And there was a Lions linebacker who I now forget his name, but same thing. They like won at the end of the game, and he jumped up and came down and tore his ACL.
Jeez.
Lions luck.
Yeah.
It's tough. JD texting in, the double bird by Eli and Peyton's reaction was the best thing in sports
call.
This week.
That is a good call. That is. That, I'm glad that got a mention. That's fantastic.
And then he's like, can you blur this out?
Yeah, Eli in the middle of the double bird. Yeah, y'all can blur this out, right? Live TV?
I'm going to keep these middles up for you so you can blur them properly, okay? I'm going to hold this for you. Blur that, will you? That's great. Eli, I'm an Eli fan. I've never
me too.
Never thought
I never was before, but
can he do it on his own though with the Giants?
I don't know. Guess we'll find out.
I don't know. It's good stuff. If he has Jeremy Pruitt on as a guest.
They can break down the qualities of asparagus. What's that?
There's a lot of good asparagus in Manhattan, Jeremy.
Speaking of Jeremy Pruitt, we'll have Jeremy Pruitt's best friend, Blake Topmeyer, on with us next from USA Today. We'll look at the big weekend coming up in the SEC. That's next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.